call the November 12th, 2020 Administrative Control Board meeting with the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District in order. Do we have any public input tonight? Doesn't sound like it. Okay. Hey, Dave, I'm reading this second to last paragraph of the determination on the electronic meetings without an anchor. It says these written determinations shall be read into the minutes at the beginning of the board's meetings held in Summit County and at future as appropriate. So, I don't know. Is it appropriate? Is that what you were saying?
But it's, we just, yeah, I mean, you can certainly read it into the record, but the actual resolution of itself becomes part of the record.
Okay.
And reading it into the record basically means adopting it.
Okay, so I think it's in.
Might need to get closer.
So it looks like we have a need to go into executive session tonight. Is there a motion and a second?
I move.
Second.
Yeah, that was Karen and Bob. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous.
All right, we've got the tape restarted for open session on November 12th, 2020. Just waiting on Karen to rejoin. Hey, Steve, do you want to start queuing things up while we're waiting for Karen?
Sure.
Can I stop sharing, Steve?
Stop sharing?
No, I said I stopped sharing, so you should be good to go. No, I'll let you share your screen. You can run through it.
Okay. I thought I had, but apparently I didn't.
There you go.
All right. Should I go ahead and start, Scott, or what are your thoughts?
It's up to Mike. You want to give her another minute, Mike?
Well, can you call her and see if she needs any help?
We have a quorum. We can keep moving. She'll join.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Yep. All right. That's going to take it away, Steve Anderson.
All right. So right. I'm going to be brief tonight. So this first page just shows that we are $1.33 million better than projected. Most of that positive variance comes from revenue, the $1.2 million,
and then. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
So what about item three, the consent agenda?
Oh, Scott, did you want to do that?
Yeah, I apologize. I kind of got Steve distracted there and pushed him forward. Go ahead, Mike. Consent agenda.
Okay, item three. We've got approval of the October 22nd board meeting. We've got the check register. Do we have any POs tonight?
No POs tonight.
Okay. So were there any comments to the minutes?
Nope.
Yeah, that sounds good. How about to the, were there any questions with the check register?
Do we want to go around or?
Yeah, just go ahead, Ian. That's
okay.
That's fine. We're kind of just scattered a little here tonight, but that's fine.
I had a couple questions. A quick one, the on page 5, the new generator, TP backup. What's TP?
Treatment plant.
Okay, cool. Aqua Engineering on page 9. There was multiple items that were listed as having gone over budget, I think. Is this an issue? Did we have a contingency? Is this a trend with Aqua? I mean, do you have any concerns? Is this an issue we should be aware of?
I apologize. I was texting Karen. Sam, can you address that?
Yeah. So I... One, do not think it was an issue. We do have just a general engineering services fund. So yeah, it was my impression that the small overages we could cover with that kind of general engineering fund. But yeah, there were small overages in three of the projects, I believe, this year with Aqua.
And you're happy with their performance?
Yeah, they've actually been great to work with since I come on, and it seems like they have a great history with the district before that. I would also say, just as a general comment, but some, they are very budget conscious and have done a number of write-offs for us, even since my time has been here. And yeah, overall, I'd say they've done a good job managing their budgets.
Cool. Okay. Page 10, community water treatment plant, MCC assembly. What's MCC?
Motor control cabinet. So it's an electrical cabinet.
Okay. And those are expensive. Okay, got it. And then the last one, it's the one Tim brought up that we talked about earlier, I guess. The Park City School District on page 11, that overpayment. So was that a meter issue or a contract issue? How did that one get caught?
They actually accidentally double paid their bill, so they contacted us and asked if we could refund it to them. And then, so it wasn't anything on our part. They just accidentally double paid a month, and they wanted the money back for a little bit for their whatever reason.
So that doesn't flag on our side if somebody massively overpays?
Well, sometimes they will, just because they don't, like, they'll write out a check for $1,000 because they don't want to write out a check every month for a water bill or whatever. So it doesn't flag as out of the ordinary for us.
Yeah, because some people want to pay it. Got it. Okay, but that's it. That's all I had on the register.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Bob, did you have any questions on the check register?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, Tim?
Yeah, I had just, when I go through there and take a look at these, I always get cued by either what the dollar amount of the check was or if I don't understand what it's paying for. And there's one with Geneva, and I guess it's Geneva Rock, and it just says ENG Air Mid. For $5,000, so I'm guessing that that's gravel of some sort, $5,000 worth of gravel. I didn't
Which
know
page it. Are you on?
It's number 24253, so whatever that is.
Okay, 24, yeah.
Geneva Rock Engineering Air.
It could be the treatment plant generator pad.
That's what I was thinking too, Chris.
But there's that, and there's the flowable fill in the parking lot.
Okay. And I also had one with Aqua. It was just, for the concrete pad design, it was $4,200. I mean, does that include like the geotechnical and everything? Because I was thinking, how big is that pad?
It's fairly big, Tim. That would have been just structural design costs. And they also did the design and all the retaining walls, all the retainage around the pad. It's bunkered into a hillside.
I'm losing. Okay. I'm diving in and out of audio in here. I'm sorry I couldn't hear that, but let's move on this. And the last one, there's a drug test in there. And, you know, since Ian didn't ask about the drug test, was there an accident or something?
We did have an auto accident with one of our staff members. What happened on the road going up to the Utah Olympic Park? He rear-ended somebody who had stopped to take a picture. We've gotten a police report. Lisa and I have worked through the disciplinary proceedings on that. It's probably the extent of it, unless you have further questions.
No, that's it. I was just curious. I don't even know about the accident. That's it.
You know, Tim, I think that's a really good comment that the descriptions need to describe, you know, what it's for. And communicate. So, Karen, have you joined? Been able to join us back?
I'm unfortunately looking on my phone, so everything's even smaller than normal. But the only question I had, and you guys might have already brought it up, is that there were a bunch of things to power service. Was that well maintenance?
Power service?
Yeah.
Yeah, they came up. Chris, if I'm not mistaken, there's a bunch of charges. They're 431. They came up and did like oil filter and work on several of the pumps. Dutch Draw, White Pine, Old Ranch.
Those are all our air compressors. That's a annual maintenance thing that they do.
Okay, that was the only one I had questions on.
Okay. Well, if there's no other questions on the consent agenda, we're looking for a motion and a second, please.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
The second.
It's Karen and Tim. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, that one was unanimous. Okay. Item four, we're ready for you now, Steve.
Okay.
Thanks for waiting there.
Oh yeah, you bet. Now was everybody able to see that check register as I kind of scrolled up and down as we were talking about the different items?
So, yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You did a good job on that, Steve. Thank you.
All right. So for through October, we are $1.33 million over, better than budget. 1.2 of that is really from the revenue, both water sales and impact fees and such, comes from there. We are $80,000 under expenses for the year, but the big variance is because of the additional revenue. And I promise to be brief. So consumption and connections are kind of what we're expecting. As far as AR balance, we continue to collect. Seems like COVID hasn't impacted our collections yet. You can see the gray line there at the bottom is staying really consistent. It'll start to drop now as we head into November and December, and there's just less billing, and promontory catches up on all the summer golf course water and things like that. So I would project in November you'll see the collections even amount outstanding drop even more. Retail water sales for so far this year, this graph, you can see that for 2020, October was slightly higher than we've had in any October before. It wasn't the crazy above like we had during the summer months, but we're still running slightly above. And for October's specific water sales, again, it was really residential and golf course that put us better than budget. So, everything it's kind of going as planned. We did do the budget presentation to the county council. That went well. They thanked us for over the last several years, how well the budget's prepared and professional. So, and I commented that, yeah, there's been, I think I'm standing on the shoulders of some people who have done some good work before and kind of learning my role. So, but that went well. So we have the follow-up for that on December 2nd, the final approval of the budget. So any questions?
Well, that sounds really good.
Okay. All right. That's all I'll be brief tonight, like I promised. Make up for last week a little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like things are in pretty good shape, though, that we're up a little bit, and nicely done.
Thanks.
Okay. Item 5, Scott, overview of the conservation plan, eh?
Yeah, so let me just give me a second here. I'm going to share my screen now. Everybody see that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So what I'll do, you know, the entire plan is in the board's packet this evening. My intention was just to step through the executive summary briefly, and if there's any questions or folks have questions about the content of the report, I'm happy to try to address that. Doug Evans, this stemmed from an original draft from Doug Evans of a previous plan. As part of the consulting work that Doug has done for us this year, we asked him to update that previous plan, and then Lisa and I worked through a number of red lines and iterations. Tim is our conservation chair, so we forwarded it on to Tim a couple months ago as well to get some of his feedback. And this is, and then essentially we submitted a draft to the state per rule by August 15th. They had one very minor comment that came back, was addressed, just updating a table, and so now it is ready to be finalized and submitted to the state. It does have to go through a public process. So in our December meeting, we will have a public hearing to adopt this document. The purpose of tonight is just to have a short work session with the board. And if you have any questions, we're here to answer them. So diving into the executive summary, we just start essentially with our number of connections and our equivalent population. You can see about 5,000 ERCs or so, and roughly 14,000 folks per the census allocated or attached to those ERCs. We've got our district boundary here, shown in blue, the areas that we serve. Next up, we talk a little bit about water production. We talk about water production growing from about 600 acre feet in 2000 when we were formed, to greater than 6,000 acre feet this year.
Scott?
Yep.
Is that potable and raw water?
It is, that's correct.
So it's both?
Yep.
Okay. I think it's kind of, the reservoirs are the same color as the district on the map.
Okay, yeah, we can, we can ask Chris if he can't get into that and adjust the color on that. Let's see, we talk about our sources, source portfolio, 15 water sources, mixture of surface and groundwater. We touch on Lost Canyon being our largest source, talk about our plant. And then we get into the specifics of our usage. This table in the paragraph above it talks to our average gallon per capita day usage. That's the average number of gallons used by each person in our district. You can see the total there on the far right-hand, lower right-hand corner. The average is 104 gallons per capita day. I think it's worth noting, as we touch on in the paragraph above, that the regional conservation goal, as provided by Utah's Division of Water Resources for the Weber water users is 200 gallons per capita a day by 2030. So we're at roughly half that, 10 years ahead of time. And I think it is the result of partially the result of our pricing structure, our conservation-based rate structure. And also we receive a benefit from the number of second homes that aren't occupied for a lot of the year. So those are...
Hey, Scott, could you express those retail annual gallons then in acre feet?
Well, yep.
Because I think that's it's average gallons, it's acre feet per ERC is kind of, isn't that more where the state regs are written towards is acre feet per ERC?
I'm not even sure, Mike, to be honest with you. When it comes to gallons per capita a day, obviously it's in gallons. When it comes to water usage per ERC, the numbers I typically see are average day, peak day, which are in gallons. I haven't read, to my recollection, acre feet allocations.
For planning purposes, and then it's normally like a half an acre foot per household, isn't it?
Exactly. That's where I was going.
I think for the layperson, gallons is easier to understand, though.
We can provide them, but we can provide them both ways. It's easy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Mike, was part of your comment about how, Scott had just touched on the 600 acre feet to 6,000 acre feet that the district had grown. Maybe we could put gallons on there. So yeah, the layperson understands what 600 and 6,000 acre feet is.
Yeah.
Well, and we're trying to key back to our, bill where we were going to show them acre feet on an annual basis. And I don't know. I think that's kind of the metric that I hear what you're saying, Karen, but, it's like the hundreds of thousands of gallons. I think it's easier for people to understand, hey, it's a quarter, it's a third, it's a half is kind of what, we're shooting for.
And Scott, remind me, who's the audience for this report? Is it just the general public?
It's the general public, yep.
Okay, so, from my perspective, an acre foot is about as elusive to my understanding of what it is as a million gallons. I don't have a good handle on what a million gallons means.
Yeah, I'd have to Google it and say, how many gallons is that? And then do the math.
I use it on an infrequent basis, and I still have to look up the exact value, unless I'm using a spreadsheet that already has it pre-programmed. So, yeah, when I interact with people and I drop that term, they're usually confused. So, I think if we use it, we should put a conversion in parentheses after it.
Well, I think Scott had the answer right. Let's just show both.
I think it's 43,560 square feet, cubic feet,
square feet. Okay, so keep going, Scott.
All right, moving on. So next up, what we do is we start to talk about, the conservation piece, right? We talked about the district number of connections, how much water do our connections use? Now, where are we going in the future? You've seen this chart before a number of times. So one of the things that, Doug and I talked about was we have some capital improvement projects that we've talked about in relation to this chart. There's two water treatment plant expansions that we have talked about. And on our typical chart, you would see two step functions which show those expansions. You can see one here, and then typically you would see another one as this, as our surplus, our safety factor of water drops below our safety factor threshold, we would do another treatment plant expansion. What Doug and I talked about was applying a conservation factor or goal to this chart, and such that one expansion of the plant would carry through the planning horizon of this chart. What that amounted to was about a 0.33% reduction in water usage annually. And the way that we would do that are the categories down here below the chart. We have our new water meters that I think that we've done a good job at the front end to get folks signed up for the Ion Water application and being able to log in, but I think we can improve and sort of press additional outreach to try to get more and more folks up to speed on the fact that this is a tool, reduce the amount of water that is lost, is leaked in folks' homes and in their irrigation systems, potentially reducing water usage there. Another category is a big internal push that we are working on. We are focusing on our data management at the front end, but that is to reduce the amount of water lost through the distribution system. So what we're doing right now is we are essentially we are adding resolution to our data to be able to understand how much water we're losing in each neighborhood of the district, so that we can focus those water loss activities, you know, trying to find those losses, we can be more concentrated in those efforts. And I'm hopeful that that's going to lead to some reduction in the amount of water we provide into the system. We've got our conservation-based pricing structures. We'll continue to look for opportunities there. Another big one here that that I'd like in the future for us to do some financial modeling on is the concept of incentives. There's some state level incentives out there for things like low flush toilets and irrigation controllers and things, but you know, some of the more progressive districts around the United States have done incentives where if you pull your grass out, the district would pay you to do so to drive usage down. There may be an opportunity to partner with Weber Basin. They would stand to benefit from that as well. But we would need to do some financial modeling to see if that would be viable for the district.
Hey, Scott.
Yep.
On that particular item, you know, I keep getting pestered by my insurance company to put in an automatic household shutdown system.
Okay.
Where you program it in and it detects a leak, you know, and if you exceed, or, you know, it programs your usage, and if it goes over your usage, it shuts your system down. And I've been highly resistant to that, A, because it's expensive, and B, my radiant heat sips off of my water system when it needs water.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last thing I want is it going dry. But is that the kind of thing that we could promote as well? Do we lose that much water inside houses, or is that kind of a minor issue? It's a big issue for insurance companies because it does a lot of damage.
Sure, sure. That's the first I've heard. It's the first I've heard of that, Bob, to be honest with you. You know, I think, you know, in theory, that would be great, but I could see a lot of challenges with those systems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's part of the reason I haven't put it in.
Yeah.
But one thing we could do possibly is line up some plumbers who would do it, you know, and advertise it on our site.
Yep.
And you know, see if they do some pricing or something, you know, if it's worth it. I don't know how much water we lose actually in houses versus like irrigation, you know.
I think the irrigation losses are greater, you know, similar to they consume a lot more, right? So I think it's proportional there. You know, but it's something we can talk about. Give that some thought. You know, really where it's most effective is out at the meter, not necessarily just in your house. I understand the insurance company wants it for your house, but we want it at the meter.
About how much water is pumping into your lawn.
Yeah. So, okay. Moving on.
Can I ask a question about the chart?
Sure.
And I know we've reviewed this chart a lot, but what exactly is the reduction in peak day White Weber Basin delivery that takes place in 2022 and 2026?
Those are our regional water supply reductions. So in 2022, Karen, we moved from 1,100 acre feet to Summit Water down to 700.
Oh, so that's just the Summit water portion.
Yep. So it creates capacity in our system by reducing the amount we supply to others.
Okay. That's all. I just didn't know what that was.
Hey, Scott, there's a lot going on this chart. I think it might be worth just using a whole page for it. Right? It's really, think about that.
Okay.
And then we could maybe challenge ourselves with what the main message is we want to get across with the chart and take a couple of the lines off.
Well, okay, so the top one is, the red one is source capacity on peak. So that's really good, and that doesn't ever look like really like a problem. And then the next two down.
Yeah, the green is.
Yeah, maybe it's those three on top that really aren't of concern. And we're really just trying to look at the surplus amount and when the plant expansion is required is what we're trying to discern.
Yeah, one or the other. I think we could focus on the capital, you know, pushing off those capital expenses. Or the message can be just on the reduction, you know, the top three lines.
Well, you could modify it. So you look at the title on there and saying the peak source capacity versus peak demand with conservation goal, mm-hmm. right? So if you only have those things addressed in the chart, that should probably be enough.
Yeah.
Because I think you have other things addressed in here.
Yep. That'd just be the top three lines then. Yeah, we can clean it up.
Just makes conversations with the public easier. If you don't have to dive into all the details.
Okay. The whole surplus side.
Yep.
And what you're trying to show is that, okay, and then the plant expansions.
Yeah, I think if we just show the top three lines, we would have to talk to what that conservation is achieving.
The postponing the capital expenditures.
Exactly.
Right, that's what... Yeah. That's nice for the ratepayers.
Yeah, that'd be a dialogue that we'd show, you know, either above or below the chart.
Who's the audience
again? It's intended to be a public document, Bob. The reality is, I think there's very few people that look at it.
That's where I was going. I wouldn't twist myself into the woodwork over it.
The audience at this point is the folks that are handling the compliance. The state.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, and then just some other, you know, things that we'll continue to work on and consider education. We participate in the Children's Water Festival. We've talked about trying to do more outreach with our schools and do field trips potentially with schools to the treatment plant. We've kind of socialized some of those ideas internally. There's potential for reuse water from the Reclamation District in the future. County landscape ordinances are a potential reality. I had a conversation with Glenn Wright on the council late last week we spoke. And I know he's keen on landscape ordinances. They would be folded into approvals for new developments. There's not something that's easy to go back and unring the bell of existing developments. But they're talking about incorporating landscape guidelines into their new neighborhood mixed use code that the county planning department's working on. So that's a good thing. And then lastly, just promotion of our conservation standards and enforcement through our rules and regs. So as you can see, there's no sledgehammer here. We're going to continue with the regs that we have. You know, our water usage looks low comparatively to other areas of the state, but you know, I'm certainly interested in reducing the water loss numbers in the system and at the customer level.
Hey,
did we talk about our, you know, are we 15% water loss
Yeah, that's on page 19. That's still a ways away.
Yep, so that's all inside the core of the document.
You just wanted to do the exec summary tonight.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's specific questions or unless you have interest in me stepping through more of the document, it's a big document, 45 pages or so.
Hey, Scott, I just had two comments. One, it references in there that there's a conservation chair on the board.
Yep.
Who is that?
That's Tim.
Oh, okay. Congratulations, Tim. And, you know, as I read through, I got to the rules and regulations section, you know, about thou shalt not water, you know, outside of the windows and on these days and blah, 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 and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And my only comment is, why do we have rules and regulations and we have no snowball's chance in hell of enforcing and wouldn't enforce even if we had a chance? You know, it's like the Park City idling rule. Ever known anybody to get a ticket for idling their car? No.
It's like our backflow prevention is the same.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Mike. We're going to talk about that here shortly.
Yeah, well, we do.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying, right? I mean, that's the problem, is people pass all these regulations and rules and laws and et cetera with no hope in hell of ever enforcing, right? I mean, I go by, you know, you go by the Park City Park and they're watering at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, for heaven's sakes. What kind of example are they setting?
Well, I think at a minimum we need to have guidelines. I understand your point, Bob. Why do we have, you know, why do we have rules if we're not going to enforce them? I think if the day comes that we ever do need to step up our conservation enforcement, then we're going to need those rules in place.
Anyway, it just struck me as a whole lot of rules and regulations that, you know, and then you kind of pull a thing that says, well, don't water if it's windy. So if you're in your watering window and it's windy, which takes precedent, right? Or if it's sunny or if it's this or that, you know? Anyway, they're contradictory in some respects, or which governs, you know? If A, then B. If B, then C. Anyway, I just found it kind of an onerous set of rules and regulations, to tell you the truth.
I guess I feel like if your landscaping professionals know what the rules are, they will set it up for you, though. And I think it's good to have those rules there.
Well, we have to have them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's like a lot of work pulling this together, and
it's a good report.
That's fantastic. It's really detailed. It's great work.
Okay, are there any other questions?
Is this open to public comment as well on the December meeting?
Yes. So what we need to do, Ian, is Lisa's already working on the noticing requirements on this. So we'll have to publicly notice this, you know, kind of our standard, I believe, ad in the paper on our website. We'll have a hard copy available at the district office. It'll be on our website. And then we'll have a public hearing in our December board meeting to approve it and adopt it. And then I'll need to submit the minutes and the report and such to the state.
Okay, that's the workflow.
Sorry, so is there's a period before we approve it where we ask if there's specifically any public comment?
So it will be publicly noticed and available, and then we'll have our typical public comment portion of our board meeting if anybody attends.
Okay, so just be in that front, and if somebody wants to say something, it's then. It's not a specific session just for this. Got it.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so then tonight was just, yeah, it's an overview, chance for questions, and is there any other questions?
Nope.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. You're on next as well for item six, some general manager comments.
Yeah, so the first item up is related to the employment contracts. and worked on some language earlier to try to help the board here. What this would be is a recommendation of approval to Mountain Regional Water's Governing Board for the employment contracts for Lisa Hoffman and Chris Braun.
Moved.
Second.
That was Ian and Karen. So can you read that again, Scott, please, that it's a...
It's a recommendation of approval. So, Dave, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. So Mike's signature is on the contract as well as the chair of the council. So I view this as a recommendation of approval to the governing board, to Mountain Regional's governing board, for the employment contracts for Lisa Hoffman and Chris Braun. Is that correct?
The board is recommending to the...
to the council.
The county council.
Council. Thank you.
That's okay. It for six. That's it for so, 6A.
And so then Ian made the motion, Karen seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that was, did we hear from you there, Tim? We might have missed him, but we still have a quorum. Okay. Okay, that was the A. B, we've got some consideration of merit bonuses.
Yep, so it's that time of year. Chris, were you working towards pulling up that memo? It's not critical, but if you've got it handy, go for it. If not, I can... So anyway, it's that time of year again, as Chris is working on pulling this up. The board needs to recommend, if they're interested in recommending a merit bonus, they need to think about what that amount is. I provided a memo in the packet. What I tried to do is, I tried to outline some of the key accomplishments, that we've had as a district this year. I think it's been an exceptional year, given the circumstances, with COVID and the challenges that we're all working through. I think our work product production and water production, work product production and water production are absolutely at an all-time high. We maintained our high level of service through the pandemic. And we continue to manage the pandemic and the COVID situation as best we can. Those were just kind of my off-the-cuff thoughts from earlier today. And then, again, this memo steps through specific accomplishments that I think that we've done as a board, or not, excuse me, as a district, as a staff. Again, managing COVID, delivering more water than ever before, increased capacity by 25% in our water treatment plant this year. We diversified the 400 acre feet of water rights to be able to pull those out of the river down on the Weaver, which adds reliability to our system. If you could scroll down, please, Chris. We have made improvements to our capital project process to try to identify and start the design on these projects sooner so that we can bid them in the fall, in the spring. That led to some attractive pricing this year, and we're hoping to continue that trend. We worked through the rate increase, on the regional water supply rate. There's been a number of customer service improvements, our monthly billing audits, as we've talked about, design and launch of the new bill format, additional payment options. We're working on our noticing and our social media. We received the bond upgrade from AA- to AA this year. And, we continue to work through the transition from staff through Marty's retirement. So my recommendation to the board is that $1,000 per employee is budgeted for this year, and I would recommend the board approve that amount. And I'll turn it over to the board.
Quick question on process. So part-time... is that what I would call full-time, part-time? In other words,
their regular employees who work less than so many hours every week or every so often, as opposed to somebody who you might hire, you know, here and there and that kind of stuff.
I'm a little confused. We have one, Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong here, we have one part-time employee, and she is considered part-time because she works less than 30 hours per week. Is that correct?
She works 25 hours a week.
Every week, or more or less every week.
Yeah, more or less, between 25 and 30 hours a week. And she's our last part-time person.
Okay.
We had quite a few before.
That's good. You don't have to go in.
Okay.
And what about partial year? Do we have a minimum threshold? Have to have been here 3 months or, you know, and I presume anybody who's left and is off the payroll doesn't get it.
Correct. And it would be prorated for those who were not here for the full year.
Okay. But do we have a threshold? Like you have to have been, you know, here for a couple of months or 3 months or, you know, if you've been here for 2 weeks, you're going to get, you know, 1%?
We have been in that situation. For example, Julie Cobley started at the very end of last year and she got maybe 10% of the bonus. So we prorate it simply on the amount that you've been here. We don't use a threshold.
Okay. And it's not part of this discussion, but I noticed that you want to do safety bonuses. Are they the same process?
It's a different process. So I manage the safety bonuses. What we do is we do an incentive program throughout the year. So each quarter we have awards. We break the staff up into teams. And for those teams that didn't have an incident, they're eligible for an award. And they're typically, you know, $25, $35 type range. I believe Steve can give us the exact numbers. And then per our policies, we can award up to a $500 safety bonus per year. So what we do is we look at essentially performance across the year, and those incentives would count towards the 500. And then I make a determination at the end of the year with input from our safety committee on the awards, you know, for staff at the end of the year. That's done in November.
Okay.
Okay. Well, there any other questions on the?
Yeah.
Merit bonuses?
Scott, you said that you were budgeted for $1,000. How much does the policy allow?
So for 2020, Tim, it was $1,000. We were able to increase the policy limit to $1,500. So to answer your question, let me step back. The policy limit is $1,500 now as a result of the board's recommendation and approval earlier this year. For 2020, though, we had already done the budget process and $1,000 was budgeted per employee. For 2021, we've included $1,500 per employee in the budget, and then it would be at the board's discretion at the end of 2021.
Okay.
But we could exceed the budget if we wanted to, up to $1,500 per employee.
To be honest, I am not, haven't been in that situation before. Lisa or Steve, do you want to chime in on that?
It is in our policy now because we've adopted the policy. And,
is there an issue with council that the budget that council approved in 2019 had it in it?
Yeah, and we didn't make any budget amendments when we went in front of council this last time to make an adjustment for that.
Yes.
So, you know, it's their understanding that when we adopted the budget that that bonus number was the same because we didn't make any amendments to 2020. We did talk to them about the $1,500 for 2021, and they didn't have any issue with that.
Okay.
I just feel like for all these reasons, you know, that certainly 2020 was a super challenging year for you guys to have provided more water and done such a great job with revenues in the budget. You know, really you know, it speaks well to the whole team.
So, Scott, the policy supports a higher amount, but the budget doesn't, correct?
Correct.
How much money are we talking about in the aggregate? $20,000?
Yeah, well, we've got 25 employees, so.
$12,000.
Would we need to do a budget amendment if we did bump to 1500? I mean, that seems like a pretty de minimis value compared to the whole budget.
That's a Dave question, I think, if he's still here.
$12,000.
Given the county council's past concerns about bonuses, yeah, it's probably, you probably have to do a budget amendment.
Dave, is the county, have they or in their process of reducing staff related to their budget concerns and revenues and that kind of stuff?
The county this year, starting in April, told all the employees that there would be no performance increases this year. The current budget for next year, the county council is not projecting any merit increases and no COLA increase.
And with that in mind, and the conversations that that Lisa and I have had with Tom Fisher about being sensitive to the position they're in, I, like I said, I recommend the board approve the bonuses at $1,000.
So moved.
There's a second. Okay, that's Bob and Ian. All those in favor say aye.
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 Although we do appreciate your consideration, for sure.
Next year, you're really getting the whole thing.
I think that would be unanimous.
You might not have next year.
Update on the Weber River Watershed Protection Activities.
Not quite there yet, Mike. We got to cover face covering first. So the as a result of the
agenda.
What's that? Oh, yeah, that was Lisa sent out an amended agenda this week. So we are on 6C, which is consideration for recommendation to the county council, the adoption of the district's amended COVID-19 face covering policy. As a result of the governor's executive order in state of emergency and Tom Fisher's executive order to tighten the face covering policy, Mountain Regional has updated their face covering policy to effectively, it makes it more strict. Essentially what it does is, if you're in any district of facility, it doesn't matter if you're in your office by yourself, or your social distancing from others, you have to have a mask on. Quite simply, when you get out of your car in the morning, you need to put your mask on, and when you, you know, until you get back into your car at the end of the day. You know, the other item in here is...
Even if they're working outside?
Yep, we, so this week... Go ahead, Mike.
What if they're... The operators are working outdoors and they have 6 feet of space.
Doesn't matter. They've got to have a mask on. We met. Lisa and I held discussion forums with all the departments this week as a refresher to talk about, you know, current statistics of infection rates, to talk about CDC guidance, to talk about district policies, and also to have a discussion with the departments about any concerns that they had about specific work environment issues, right? Things, if you're in the trench and you're digging and you're trying to get a repair sleeve on, you've got two of you, right next to one another, and you're wrenching and you're breathing heavy and... you know, we kind of talked through those issues. We did not have, there wasn't a lot of dialogue to suggest that the mask policy couldn't be followed. So, quite simply, it's a more strict policy than what the board previously approved.
Scott, how many additional masks do you need to have in order to comply with this? Is it like 25% more masks on hand?
So that's a good question, Tim. We have plenty of stock of masks. I don't know an exact number for you, but we've got a bunch of them. Most of the guys are wearing cloth masks or the buff style, kind of tubular style. And we've got disposable masks. We're also looking into getting logoed masks, as we move through the end of the year. So we've got plenty. From a budget standpoint, we've essentially used all the travel and training budget this year for PPE because nobody was traveling to conferences or anything.
Okay, it seems like a pretty straightforward matter of business to have a motion to adopt this policy.
There's real quick, there's a typo in bullet F, the page that's currently up, second line. I think the word work in the middle of that needs to be worn, W-O-R-N.
Mm. You got it. Yep. Thanks, Ian. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
We'll make that correction. And again, this is a recommendation to the governing board for approval.
And this is consistent with what the new county measures are, because I haven't read those.
Yeah, it is. The language, our language isn't exactly the same due to, you know, my role is a little different than Tom's, we're covering all the bases.
Okay.
I have forwarded it to Janie Bracken as well at the county for her review. I haven't heard back from her, but I don't. It's pretty much the same as the county.
And Jamie wrote the county policy,
so we should be okay.
Okay, we have a motion to recommend this change to the policy to the county council.
So moved.
Second.
That's Tim and Ian. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Did we get Bob there?
Yes, I said aye.
Okay, I'm just having a hard time catching everything. So what's next on the agenda, Scott?
Next is a wildfire mitigation item. So this is just FYI for the board. Just letting you know some of the work that I've been doing with Janet Young at the county and Jessica Kirby from Basin Rec. You know, we have been building what I believe is a really, really strong stakeholder group locally with the National Forest Service, with Utah State University, the State Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. And other local partners, Weber Basin, like I said, Basin Rec in the county, to bring focus on wildfire mitigation and prevention in Weber Canyon, to do our best to mitigate water quality impacts to the intake structure that brings water up to our treatment plant. You know, the long story short is that there is research being conducted by Utah State University where they are looking at sediment transport modeling and the prediction of debris flows with different wildfire intensities to highlight critical areas of the Weber watershed. That information is going to be provided to the Forest Service. The Forest Service will then interpret that information and determine which of those areas are practical to do wildfire mitigation work to, whether it be mechanical thinning or prescribed burns or other tactics that they may use. Utah State is also doing a second phase of research where they're looking at what types of mitigation are most effective in those critical areas, and the Forest Service will be taking those into account as well. The concept here is that we are trying to help the Forest Service make research-based and practical decisions in identifying and scoping wildfire mitigation projects in the Weber watershed. Once those projects are ID'd and scoped, then we are working with a number of folks at the national level to try to identify innovative financing ideas. Those would include private investors, environmental groups. There has been success nationally on actually selling bonds, and where private investors and companies are purchasing these bonds, and a revenue stream is identified for a payback. One of the challenges is where does that revenue come from? I think after the projects are ID'd and scoped, that's where there's going to be a lot of work to identify who cares about that and to try to get those groups on board to support financing the work. So Forest Service has been awesome. I think a lot of work can be done just within their programmatic funds, their typical programming dollars that they do. I think we're about 18 months out from having projects ID'd, and that timing is about right for the Forest Service to finish up work in the Upper Provo watershed and then again align their focus in the Weaver. So that's really the scoop. You know, I've been working to just bring people together. I think as a team, we've been super effective. And the feedback we're getting from the Forest Service and others is that this is pretty cutting edge with respect to trying to get people to work together locally. So we'll keep working on it.
God, is there a... Oh,
go ahead, hey, Bob. No, go ahead.
All right, thank you, Bob. Is part of the potential funding from this associated with the monies that get collected from some of the trees that are thinned from the forest? Is there a financial incentive there?
There is. That's a small piece, I think, Ian. Unfortunately, there's not a huge market for that. And, you know, one idea that this really interesting, I guess, that Glenn Wright brought up is that he's working with the Forest Service and with a landowner down near Echo. They're talking about doing an energy project, essentially, using the timber. I don't remember all the details, but essentially using the timber to create energy and sell or distribute it. So, you know, that's another option.
Okay. And then just final comment. I think you've got the A team with Jana and then with Jess Kirby. Jess has been, she's gone through trial by fire with the wildland mitigation work that she did in Summit Park. I think it's absolutely fabulous. I think it's cutting edge. Unfortunately, there are a subset of people that don't want any trees cut down. So, I'm sure she can bring some really good lessons to the table of how to mitigate those conversations with the community.
I agree. Thanks, Ian.
Where is USU getting its funding from? Do you know, Scott?
Let's see. I'm trying to remember the name. I can send it to you in an email, Bob. Their primary funding source. We are contributing a small amount. So all the water providers up here, Mountain Regional, Summit Water, Park City, and Weber Basin, are all contributing or have promised to contribute $3,000 a piece, I think, to support the second phase of Utah State's funding so that they can focus on the Weber. The Weber was not part of that second phase, and we've brought that in as a second phase and are assisting in the funding.
Okay. Do you have any more? I was intrigued by the investor aspect of this, and what would attract an investor other than just kind of money over money return, unless they're an environmental organization that's basically giving you grant money or something. What the model is.
Out on the bond market, it's something the Mountain Regional experienced last year. There's bonds that have the green bond label to them. And essentially they we're finding, and Lisa or Steve, you can jump in here too, that those bonds tend to be more attractive on the bond market. And so those are being, you know, purchased at better rates. So now I guess as long as they see the guaranteed return, they're just interested in investing in, you know, these green bonds. Are they, you know, are they, fully up to speed?
Most of them are like municipal bonds. They're federally tax free and potentially state tax free.
I think that's correct, Bob.
Do you, did you have any view on the mitigation activity? Is it mostly focused on deadfall removal, or does it involve removing live trees as well?
I think it's both, Bob. I think it's deadfall. I think there's a lot of understory mitigation work that's done, which would be live. And some of the mitigation, I got to be honest with you, we did a field day up in the Upper Weber, and it was an eye-opening experience, because here in the armchair, we just sit back and say, well, just go do your mitigation work, thin the forest, you know, let's just make sure we don't get big fires. You actually get out there in some of those drainages, and there's no way they can get up there with heavy equipment and get, you know, do actual thinning work. You know, some of the mitigation is to just get roads cut in so that they can do prescribed burns and be able to, you know, fight fires or get fire breaks in. It's not necessarily the cutting trees down, which is the first thing that comes to our minds.
Well, if you want another example, you can come out to my place after the snow melts and I'll show you what an individual landowner goes through.
Yeah.
Who can't cut roads, you know, because they're restricted from doing it, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Ian.
Sorry. If people are interested, so Jess Kirby, who's on this team with Scott and Jana, she led the wildland mitigation effort that was just done in Summit Park. So if you hike any of those trails from the Parkview or Crestview trailhead and head across the upper portion of Summit Park, it's massively different from years before. And a huge portion of that terrain, there are no roads. There's a couple of trails to go through, but the crews had to do it all by hand. So it was weeks and weeks of work. And, yep. You know, that's only a few acres of property. We're talking an entire watershed. So this is a really complex process, but it is possible to do without equipment. And it is, like Scott said, I mean, there's portions where you do direct thinning of live trees. There's other portions where you do just understory mitigation. And then there's other portions where you just collect deadfall and do prescribed burns. And there was a community process for that project being done. And the foresters that participated in that call, they went through the methodology that they follow. There's a prescribed scope of work and where they do certain aspects based on criteria, you know, based on data collection that USU will do, obviously. But, it's a pretty methodical process and it is possible, but it does cost a lot of dollars.
Was that public land up there that they cleared or private land? Yeah.
It's an easement on the backside of the neighborhood that's held by Basin Rec, I believe. So it's public land.
All right. Any other questions on 6D?
Yep.
All right. In the other category, 6E, I've got a couple things I want to just bring to the board's attention. First off, Utah Olympic Park has an immediate need for snowmaking water. They're looking for 10 to 12 million gallons of water, roughly 35 acre feet. I sent them an email earlier this week and let them know we could provide that water at our snowmaking rate, which with the pumping fees is about $14.60 per 1,000 gallons. I'll wait to hear back from them. Secondly, with respect to UOP, they're looking at an expansion project on their skiable terrain to support additional training activities and potentially Olympic events in 2030. They are looking at long-term need of roughly 75 acre feet per year. And they're interested, they're talking to both Mountain Regional and Summit Water, to try to understand if who could provide, and at what cost. Essentially we can kind of hold a lot of this for another meeting, but, the district has habitually or historically looked at snowmaking water as, essentially lesser priority water. It's right in line with its wholesale water. It's only available until, retail customers, need that water to support new growth. I think if Mountain Regional, is going to provide snowmaking water, I think that we'd have to look at our rate schedule. I think that we, would, you know, they'd have to, likely come in, pay impact fees, and then we would have to identify what rate is appropriate for that use. Our typical rate structure, we've had a lot of discussions internally about, trying to find the right category for a user that, uses during the off-peak season, who uses high volumes of water, for a short period of time, which largely our rate structure doesn't support. And also keeping in mind our customers, right? We want to make sure that, rates are equitable across all customer classes. So, to be continued, I just want to let the board know that there is a request out there. We will work internally on some options and we'll discuss that further at another meeting.
I wonder if UOP has done a study of how much of their water gets recaptured. So what's their net usage? You know what I'm saying?
As far as return flow, Bob, or what do you mean recapture?
Yeah, return flow. Yeah. You know, how much of the melt off do we ultimately, get back?
Yeah, I'd imagine that's fairly well published, but I'm not sure.
But, yeah, I think there's studies on it. The issue, I guess, is how does it adapt to the specific microclimate that they're in and the watershed that they're in?
Yeah.
And clearly going to vary from year to year based on weather and, evaporative aspects of it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't think we had any infrastructure down gradient of UOP. I thought that was more Summit Water terrain over there with wells.
Yeah, it may be.
That's correct.
I mean, I think it would just be an interesting PR thing for them to be able to say, well, we blow all this snow, but, 60% of it flows back into the aquifer or something,
Yeah, you're right, Bob. There's really good studies on that with recharge, both from snowmelt from ski resorts and then also from lawns just in residential areas.
Yeah.
It's something for us to think about because a lot of the snowmaking water that we provide goes to areas where we don't have down gradient infrastructure to recapture that water. So once we pass it, we get out of our system.
Quite simply, it's an important community amenity. If Mountain Regional is going to serve it, how do we identify a rate that's equitable across our customer classes and for the use? So, next up, we've got another kind of water request, the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company. We've got an emergency interconnect with them. We have for a few years now. And historically, we have essentially just held a near zero balance of, of them needing water. Essentially, they support some of our lots at the top of Stagecoach as a benefit to Mountain Regional, and we have the ability to pump them water in the event they have a leak or they have a fire up there. And we can essentially pump them water to keep a near zero balance. They have had some challenges with their groundwater production this year, and they are worried that that's going to continue. So this is the first year that that near zero balance is not able to be maintained. They've taken about 6 acre feet or so, a couple million gallons of water from Mountain Regional this year. They're not able to provide it back to us from their sources. And, you know, back in 2014, there was an MOU signed between the district and Pine Meadows, which provides a structure for payment for that water in the event that this happened. That MOU also contemplates, you know, how the original interconnect was paid for. Pine Meadows paid for that. There's also some discussion about some, not terms, but considerations if Pine Meadows were to ever annex into the district. Pine Meadows has asked for essentially an updated agreement, which would include a perpetual water supply to the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company, where Mountain Regional would act as their source to meet their future demands. You know, although that I had contemplated that in the past, again, we've had a lot of discussions internally, and quite simply, our rules and regs doesn't support that. I'm going to share my screen for a moment here. I've got the section up on the screen here, extraterritorial water and operation of service. If you look at this second to last line here where my cursor is, wholesale water sales are allowed if excess or surplus water capacity is available to increase revenue, which in turn benefits all customers, as well as putting to use possible idle infrastructure. Wholesale water sales always utilize surplus water source and infrastructure capacity and are supplied at an interruptible or lesser priority to retail customers within the district. Quite simply, Pine Meadows could not subscribe customers against a interruptible source. Right? So if you think back to how Mountain Regional was formed to bring deficient water systems under one umbrella and create economies of scale and reliability. We were not formed as a wholesaler. We did not, you know, supply each individual deficient system water so that they could survive. And then I also think there's issues with respect to the master agreement. We supply wholesale water in accordance with this section 8.1 of our rules and regs to Weber Basin. That water is sunsetting as Mountain Regional's retail customers need that water. So for us to sunset wholesale water to one customer, you know, say that we don't have any more, but then start providing wholesale water to another customer, in my eyes, doesn't work. You know, what does this all mean? The easy solution isn't going to work. Pine Meadows, I don't think, is going to be real pleased about that. It could lead to an annexation of Pine Meadows into the district. It's clear that was discussed and contemplated in the past. There may be an opportunity to work, collectively on a, well, let me step back. There may be, you know, they'd have an opportunity to look into source development on, you know, within their, on their own terms, right? Try to find source to meet their needs. Maybe there's an opportunity to work collectively on source development of a well that we have at the north gate of the Promontory neighborhood. I think there's a chance that there could be, if that well produced water, and excess water, maybe there's a mutually beneficial project that could be done. But really, it's an update to the board. We've got another system that's, in a difficult position. I think we have, based on the previous MOU, some structure to be paid for water that they need in the near term, but in the long term, they're either going to need to annex or there's going to need to be source development done to support them, whether that it's done by themselves or it's done jointly. So I'll open it up for any comments or discussion or questions.
If I've got the right place, that's not a very dense location. The infrastructure is probably pretty lousy. Annex them in standpoint, there's going to be, I think it's a pretty hairy kind of deal, you know. I don't know what other alternatives they have up there.
Yeah, where is it?
Yeah, I had the same question. I don't know where Pine Meadows is.
It's Tollgate.
Tollgate.
Could you pull it up and I'll line it for us?
Yeah, Chris, I'll stop.
I'm pulling it up right now.
I'll stop sharing. Chris, you can take over.
I think that's okay. Maybe we can keep moving. I really know where Tollgate is. Anything else on 6?
The last thing, Mike, you brought up backflow before. We have talked internally about backflow to try to address, well, to talk about some of the questions that we got during the last board meeting. Cutting to the chase, the state says we have the best program in the state, and the board doesn't have a lot of confidence in our backflow program, which means we as staff have not done a good job of educating the board of what our program is to make it a good program. So we will be working, Lisa's going to be working on a slide deck, a presentation that we'll do in the first part of the year sometime. Before we talked about doing it in the springtime as we get ready for irrigation system when it's a relevant topic of conversation. We've talked about improving our public outreach to try to educate our customers on why backflow devices are are required, and try to continue to improve in that area. So you can expect, again, you can expect an agenda item here probably in the March-April timeframe, where we try to bring some focus on what it is that we do in that area.
Okay. Well, I think that'll be good. We're looking forward to seeing that. And maybe just jumping forward a little bit, I was looking at Anna's report on the number of backflow reports that were completed. I think that's the ones that were submitted back to us. It was 606, and I think there's about 4,887 ERCs. So we're getting about 12% of the reports completed. Is that the right way to look at that?
Our total number of connections, Mike, is on the order of 4,500 or so. So the ERC count's going to run a little high due to some of our customers using more than a typical ERC, but you're on the right track.
I got you.
However, not all of our customers are required to do the backflow.
Okay.
Say that again.
Not all of our customers are required to do the backflow, right, Scott?
Yeah, they need to have. It's those that have irrigation systems or fire suppression systems.
Okay. Well, let's leave that for another day. Is there anything else in 6?
Nope, that's it from me for the moment.
Okay. Item 7 is Dave Thomas. Welcome back. It's nice to see your face there. Do you have any legal updates for us?
No.
Dave, is there any update on the hideout annexation? The board's had some questions about that while you were out. My understanding is the annexation's complete and there's no further update, but I don't know if there's more to it than that.
No, I mean, that's it. They completed their annexation. They have a certificate from the Lieutenant Governor. Litigation is still going on.
Okay, well, thank you.
Don't you love it?
keeps
so item eight, the any questions on the department updates? You want to just let's go around the table again. Karen, would you lead off, please?
I just want to say I like that Brian added pictures. And I also like that Anna put those charts and graphs in there. I thought that was an easy way to see what was going on in that department.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Bob.
Yeah, I have nothing on technology. Public service. Do we have any locations where we will do meters during the wintertime? Will we dig in the... in the snow, so to speak, and froze, put in meters or access pits, I guess, right?
A lot of the meters we have left, Bob, are inside, so we'll continue to try to get in and
through the winter.
Yeah, we'll try to get in and continue to change them. COVID's obviously creating some hardship in that area.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Engineering, I appreciated the comments on safety. Did have one question about the workforce housing for the canyons. Have we got a fix on whether that's going to be all at one time or whether we're going to get phased?
The feedback I've gotten from the developer is they're pulling all building permits at one time.
Okay. So that'll be a big boost to us from a budget standpoint, huh?
Yep.
That's part of their agreement with the county in fulfilling their benchmarks. So they're doing the whole thing.
And then the examples of the contracts that were in sort of backing up the safety issues, I presume our contracts are all approved by the county legal team.
Historically, the county has not reviewed our construction contracts. Not since I've been with the district, anyway.
Okay.
Dave, is that something that you do for Public Works and for Basin Rec and some of these other similar groups?
We do, and we can do it for Mountain Regional if you want us to do that.
Okay. You know, it's.
I'd kind of leave that to you, Dave. You know, for a legal assessment as to whether we need it or not, from my perspective.
We have form contracts
that
we used, and a lot of those form contracts come out of the AIA and so forth, and usually we don't have a lot of changes to them unless you want to do something unique.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good highlight, Bob, and Sam and I will work with Dave on that. The district, since I've been around, we have never had our own form contracts. We have used contracts from our engineering consultants who are using similar form contracts.
You know, one of the things we've been doing lately is updating the insurance requirements and the limits. For both the construction and professional services, that might be a place for some input from Dave's.
Yeah,
we staff would be really good.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mike. I think that we are actually up to speed on that. We updated our service contracts with our, you know, the technical groups, and Dave reviewed the insurance limits and asked for some of those to be increased, which we were able to accomplish.
Very good. Okay, Bob, anything else?
Yeah, just a quick one on operations. Somebody came by and painted my fire hydrant. Would they have flushed it at the same time?
Yes, they typically turn it on, flush it, check the pressure. So, yes. Yep.
And that's all part of my $10 a month rental fee?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. One last question. I'm curious as to whether any of our people would be designated essential workers in terms of priority for COVID vaccine.
Generally not.
Okay.
Yeah, the way those are coming down in terms of priority is
first up is going to be medical service providers. And then after medical service providers, it's going to be those who are in heightened risk classes, senior citizens, those with compromised immune systems, and then to the general populace.
Okay. Very good, Bob. Anything else? Great. Okay. Tim, what are you, any questions?
I was wondering when Dave was going to say the Utah Jazz. the pecking order. But I had two comments on here. One is Sam put the document in the in his report that was showing who had the responsibilities. I think it was a responsibility section in there that was talking about the contractor had responsibility for safety and whatnot. And it was pretty clearly laid out what parties had responsibility in there. And I think that, Sam, that might have been in response to a question that I had there about it was really coming from a question that Bob started on there, is that it had to do with shoring of the trenches. And I think that the discussion was is that it was observed, or maybe it wasn't observed, but the contractor maybe wasn't shoring the trenches properly, and there was an issue about who has responsibility for safety. And the reason that I was asking about that is it goes to a professional licensing issue also that you have to be careful with. If you're out in the field and you're a licensed professional and you're observing what is patently an unsafe action, you don't necessarily get a pass because of the contract. You don't get to go point at the contract and say, this was clearly the responsibility of the contractor. Dave, you could probably chime in on this, but it's not all that cut and dry in my experience. And so the issue came up about construction safety out there, and I was just trying to make the point that having the contractor out there working in an unsafe circumstance, we have to bring it to their attention that they're apparently not operating in accordance with the contract, not just say that they have the responsibility under the contract for it.
Yeah, that point's very well taken, Tim. In addition, just, investigating the contracts from a legal liability perspective, we've also had a renewed focus on safety and been bringing that up during our weekly construction meetings and discussing trench safety in particular with all our contractors doing underground work moving forward. So, yeah, the point's well taken.
At the end of the day, we own the whole works, right? We can write these contracts and try to give the responsibility and the risk to others, but ultimately it kind of all comes back to us. So if we see something unsafe that the contractor is doing, I think we need to be acting. I mean, am I close to right on that, Dave? Or
well, we
don't touch it.
I mean, we would have concerns in terms of potential liability, but it is a difficult thing to try to manage.
So anyway, that was my comment on what you'd put in there, Sam, about the contracts. It wasn't anything in the contracts that was surprising about the assigning of responsibility, but it's more about how that's dealt with out there in the field when something is, observed to be unsafe. What do we do? Okay? The other thing is, and this is not in the report, but I got a flyer in the mail this week from Dominion Energy. And it was basically saying, did you know that you have responsibility for the water line between the connection and your house? And when those things break, they cost a lot of money. And so Dominion Energy, through a division of theirs, is at least going through my neighborhood in Silver Springs and telling people how maybe that line needs to be replaced by Dominion Energy and their forces. And I don't know if anyone else has seen these things, but to what degree have you seen any of this type of stuff going on that do they come to Mountain Regional and say, hey, we need to have you come out here immediately and deal with the water because I'm replacing the water line between these houses? I don't know if anyone's actually doing this, but I got a flyer, a letter in the mail from these guys that were basically trolling for business.
That's
I got two of them, Tim.
And they're from,
I got one too.
They're from Dominion Energy, the gas company?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, they have a division that does like these utility things. And so somebody, they must have hired someone that said they can go out there and get some more business for them.
Scott, can you explain the ownership of the, from the main to the meter to the service and where the line is on who owns what?
Yeah, sure, Mike. So if the meter pit is at or near the property line, the district owns the service from the main to the meter pit, and the customer owns from the meter pit to the house or to the point of use. If there is no outdoor meter pit, then it's the property line becomes the delineation point. So the district owns from the water main to the property line. The customer owns from the property line to the point of use.
So it's really just an insurance policy that if there's a break on the customer side, it provides for a repair of that.
Yep, I've seen
that. They do it for sewer laterals as well. There's quite a business coming up on, and I don't know why it's going through Dominion.
I've seen the.
I think it's a third party. I read it as it's a third party just passing it through and trying to, you know, snowball people that Dominion is managing this and they're a big company and they're reputable. But I read it as it's a third party and. Yep, probably are.
Okay.
So I've seen the insurance policies. I have not heard about these flyers that are talking about replacing water laterals. But thanks for the heads up.
Okay. Anything else there, Tim?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you. Like, Ian, what'd you think?
Okay, so I'll try to go quick. So thank you to Brian for getting a Summit Park water main break in this month's report. I missed it last month, and I was totally flattered that my name even got in there. So thank you. I had a question for Sam, also on the contract language. I didn't see in there, like if there's non-compliance by the contractor, they'll be removed from the project. I don't necessarily think we need to have that language. Maybe it's somewhere else in the contract agreement that they can be terminated for cause. But I've worked under numerous agreements where I've either been subject to that or I've managed projects where we've held contractors accountable to that. And I think it helps put safety at the forefront. So just something to think about.
Thank you.
Chris, on the, you made a comment that Rocky Mountain was pretty slow on,
Ian, we just lost you.
Yeah, sorry, Ian, you started your comment about Rocky Mountain and I lost it.
No, I apparently can't hear either.
Things out for us, and if there's anything we can do there.
Hey, Ian, we missed a lot of that. So I think what most of us heard is that Chris made a comment that Rocky Mountain Power was slow. And is there anything we can do about that?
Yeah, or was it the contractor's issue?
No, it doesn't fall under the contractor. It's just, I mean, Rocky Mountain is saying right now that if you were to call, they're scheduling into January for new services. And they've just been extremely slow and in responding to anything, you know, even if it's new contracts or anything with us, they've just been, it's just been slow getting stuff going.
Okay. Thank you. And then last thing, thanks again to Lisa and Scott for doing that proclamation for Marty Gee with the county council. Thank you.
Happy to.
Okay, well, thanks, Ian. I thought the, you know, the the spawn KPCW, Day Without Water, was, you know, it's really valuable to, and kind of get our message out to the community. I just think it's really important there. So thank you for doing that. And, you know, that's all I had. So is there anything else to go over tonight?
Yep.
That's it for me.
Yeah. Good?
All set.
All right. Well, you know, this pandemic's been going a while, and I think it's starting to wear, you know, on everybody. And I think, right, it's getting old. And so I've been thinking about, you know, if we can just be patient and kind to each other and just understand how hard it is for everybody, you know, it'll just make things better. And so thank you guys for all your hard work. And, you know, with that, we'll be adjourned at 8:14.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike, for the closing comments. And everybody have a great evening.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.